Welcome, welcome to Tide 45 Crazy Times. Oh, but is there anything more fitting for these times than a woman with an electric guitar and a bag full of melancholy songs to ponder our solitude, our madness, love gone wrong? Or if you're lucky, all three. Well, look no further. Sydney Rose will Eva Cassidy the hell out of you. Yes, she will. Yes, embrace the sadness. It's often the only way to understand it. Sydney puts a little bit of her soul in each piece of her works. And that's exactly what you want from a singer-songwriter, right? Am I right? Vulnerability, beauty, talent. Sydney Rose will humble you with her songs and let you know, even in solitude, you are not alone. Welcome, Sydney Rose.
Thank you. Yeah. I have listened to so many of these intros and I thought I was ready and I clearly was not. That was insanely beautiful. Thank you.
I get you guys every time. Come on.
I also, that music at the start, every time I put it on and I'm driving, I feel like I'm escaping a bank robbery. That's just like what I visualize with like the organ stuff. It's great.
That's so great. Good. And an original piece by me and my brother.
Amazing. Do you do lots of things with him?
Unfortunately, no, because he just, I annoy him. I annoy him. Aaron Mendoza. I know you. Yeah. Big brother. You know what I mean? I'm annoying.
Fair. I had a duo with my bro.
Oh, yes. Yes, you did.
Yeah, I had a duo with him back in the day.
I think from one of your recordings, if I'm not wrong, is that you, was it the ISO situation where he was involved in that? Was he playing keys or something? Or yes, am I right? What's his name? Shout out to your brother.
You would be correct. Yeah, Luke Singleton. He's my brother. He's actually my drummer too. So he's a man of many talents and he was playing keys in that. And now I've forced him into doing drums. He also plays guitar. So who knows what he'll do next? Maybe he'll sing.
One of those dudes makes me sick. Get rid of them. Too much competition.
I know.
Chill out, Luke.
Absolutely. I had to put him in the back, you know?
I can barely sing and you're going to do all that?
Yeah.
So that's cool.
And get it, his wife is my bassist. So it's just like the ultimate rhythm section I could ask for, really.
That's so funny. That's cool though, man. I guess you got to use what's around you, right? Right? If she plays bass, get her on the bass.
Exactly.
If your brother plays keys, drums, and whatever else, well, we're going to use that too. It seems like we have that similarity where I guess there's a couple of people that are musically inclined in your family, being yourself and your brother. Does that stem from anywhere? Like, do your parents kind of do the music thing?
So my dad's he kind of dabbled in like keys and bass stuff, but he's like most known for in the music stuff for like sound engineer things.
Oh, cool.
And then my mum, she's a drummer. So that's where my brother gets it from. She teaches music, just around here. So yeah, they all have their little things, our little pockets.
So dad's a sound engineer. When you record your stuff, do you look at his eyebrows and like, oh, what's the problem, dad? Right?
Absolutely. If you ever come to one of my gigs, you just look for the kind of older, he'd hate me saying this, the kind of older guy just walking around with a frown on his face, just like listening up to the speakers. Like he'll always come back being like, you should have recorded that, Jesse, so you can like listen back on things and correct it for next time. So
dude, you're preaching to the choir, man. My dad's a jazz jazz pianist, right? And for I made the mistake of showing him my album and having a listen. He's like, that's the wrong chord. it clashes with the melody. Look here, you know, Filipino. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, why did I do this? I knew I shouldn't have done this. So did your parents play together or anything when they were coming together or...?
They did in a way. They were in a bush dance band.
Yes. What's bush dance?
And they take lots of pride in that. I forget the bush dancers exist, but you know those like... those cross instruments that have all the bottle caps on it and you like they do all those like line dancing kind of things.
Right.
That was apparently where they met. That's the key to romance, people. Like that's
seven brides for seven brothers. It's just everyone's wearing checkered shirts and doing little dance ensembles.
Yeah. Exactly. But my dad was a country bumpkin, so I'm also not surprised. Like he grew up in Euroa and that's where I think the band originated from.
All right. So then what happened in regards to how did it first happen for you? Always do a little bit of an origin story here. And I guess we know about your parents and, and what they do. Your mom was is a drummer, and your dad was playing bass. And so, were there just instruments around? How did you go about it, or how did you find your voice or playing?
There was always instruments around, and like my mum had a keyboard from the get go, so she kind of got my brother Luke and I to learn piano when we're in. I think we started around like prep or something like that. And we also grew up in the church, so like singing in choirs or singing, you know, in harmonies and stuff, that's where I kind of got that from. And I think my mum always wanted the like Von Trapp family singers band kind of vibe. She loves the sound of music. So I think she always had dreams of us all being able to sing together. So we would kind of do family jams and things like that.
What? Come on. 50,000 hits on Spotify, plays on Spotify, am I right? It's that's kind of crazy. It definitely trumps my 12 hits. You got to be happy with that.
Yeah. I was absolutely stoked with how Guarantee went. It was such a special song. So to have it received so well, I think was just a really lovely compliment to it. It was really good.
And how does that kind of happen? Like in regards to that, did you kind of, what did you do? Send it out to the Jays and that kind of thing? Or does it go on a Spotify playlist? How does one get to those kind of numbers I'm guessing that you're an independent artist.
Yeah, it was really a trial and error because before Guarantee, I had released my first track that was kind of, it wasn't super on brand. It was just to kind of suss how that went. And I think I learned a lot from putting out that release and how it was received by Triple J, that when it came to Guarantee, because we're in lockdown, I tried to build upon all of the idea of press that I hadn't done from the first release and kind of build upon. So I think the best way that Guarantee did so well was I did pitch to Spotify, and because I had Bullet reach number one on the Unearthed charts and be played in America and on Australian radio too. I think those kind of stats, along with the way that maybe I pitched it, I'm actually not sure how it managed to land an editorial, but it did like land an editorial playlist on Spotify. And I think that's generally what brings a lot of streams when you're first starting out as an artist. So I was just very fortunate, I think, and Triple J got around it again. And yeah, so just a lot of loving on that one.
So walk me through that, because we got a lot of youngsters there, and don't have to be young, but people that are kind of getting their music out. And how does one pitch to Spotify? Like how do you go about that?
Yeah, so I had absolutely no idea that people did this or that people had teams behind them that do these sorts of things. So I kind of feel fortunate enough to have had to learn behind the scenes. And so with this one, I learned that there's a thing called Spotify for Artists, where you can log in and you can see all your stats for Spotify. Mm. And when you pitch through a distributor, when you put your song on there, so I went through Ditto, and there's an awesome team there, and I'm sure you could ask people at Ditto. I didn't realize that there were personal people you could email through and they would actually help you. But so once you put it through, it'll appear on Spotify for Artists saying, this is your upcoming track. And within, I think it's between two to 8 weeks before your release comes out, you can send a pitch and it'll show you as an offer, and you just basically put in these genres and subgenres and then a little bit of a bio or a pitch that you come together. It's very short. It's only a couple sentences. And then they just go through, and that's how people land on certain Spotify playlists, unless you have personal relationships with people at Spotify, which I just don't, and most small artists don't.
Do you have to pay for that when you're pitching to them, or it's just something that you go through?
No.
So your distributor, like Ditto, they do it for you. Is that right? Is it a communication between Spotify and Ditto?
No. So once you put it through Ditto or DistroKid or any of those, it'll appear on Spotify for Artists, and you can get your personal login for Spotify for Artists, no matter what distributor you're going through. You don't pay for that. That's just because it's going to come out on Spotify, mm-hmm. and that's all free. Once it's through there, it's just free and what their people screen from your applications. But because they get so many, I'm still learning, even though after Guarantee went well, I did a different pitch for the next song and it didn't manage to land an editorial. So I'm still trying to figure out what they do look for and what works and what doesn't. It's kind of an experiment really when you're on your own team.
It is. I think that's really, and thanks for sharing that little in secret there, because what happens is, I think with a lot of artists, and it happened to me as well, is that you can take a year or two to maybe write an album, and you do it, you press it, you record it, you spend all that money doing all that. And then I think for a lot of people, they'd go, now what? I don't know what to do with it. And then it just sits under their bed. They get, like they join a DistroKid or whoever it is, Ditto or whatever. But they don't know how to take it, forward with and present it to the people. And I think that's a really cool way. Obviously, playlists are a big help in getting it to the 50,000 mark, and it's got to be a good song that resonates and pops and does all those beautiful things, but I just know people that have some of them have been on the show, super talented guests, right, record every year, they're bringing out content, they just don't know how to get it out there. So that's cool. You got to be on top of all of it, don't you, these days?
Yeah. And so that's why I think it's that, have no shame in asking questions, because I came in with such a learning mindset of, I don't really know, I'm just going to try. I think because I didn't have so much weight and pressure. And I think when you spend years making a record, there's going to be so much of you that's so personally tied to your work and you want to do it well, and it can stress you out. And so I think it helped to have a growth kind of mindset and just ask whoever I knew that had slight connections and just be like, can you tell me how to do this? Because I'm really not going to know. And I think that was the best thing, is just community and reaching out to people for that kind of stuff.
There you go, Type 45ers. See, if you don't ask the question, you don't ever find out, right? Take it from Sydney Rose. She knows what she's doing. So then just going back to what you said in regards to that first song, And you said how, you know, you just wanted to test the waters, and you were saying that it wasn't necessarily a song that worked in that regard. Not to say that it wasn't a good song, but it wasn't something that would make it on a particular playlist or get it up to those kind of numbers. What difference do you find there? What was it that changed? How did you change your approach to kind of get it there the way you did with Guarantee?
Yeah, I think because I was so new as an artist and I was just trialing things, I don't think I understood the world that I was stepping into by releasing music, particularly in a pop realm. And I just had no idea the kind of time and teams and people that spend their time doing this stuff. And so when I first put it out, I didn't think about a 2-year plan, and I didn't have a manager telling me you need to align with one particular vision and you need to follow that through. And I had no direction. I think there's such a freedom in that. But at the same time, now that I have worked more and gotten to know what my voice is and what I want my artist voice to be, a lot of the stuff now doesn't really align with that initial song. But I'm still very grateful for how Bullet got me on the map as like noticed by Triple J and things like that. And it's funny how the people that enjoyed Bullet, a lot of the time their taste doesn't really match Guarantee when that came out, and vice versa. And so Guarantee's a lot more my sound. Like, you know, I want to be a lot more raw and honest and talk about things like mental health and all that kind of stuff. And so Bullet was a lot more of just like, I wrote it on my guitar about a boy, and then I took it to a friend and we made it a beat, but neither of those sounds are really what I write about or what I sound like. So I think that that's kind of why I just didn't have a heart connection to Bullet in the same way that I do everything else that I create. And that was just a matter of time. So whether I leave it up there forever or if I just keep it on my Unearth page and then I just move along with the exact branding, I think it's all stuff that I'm just kind of learning and curating as I go. But yeah, hopefully that answered the question.
100% that answered the question really well. And I think, you know, if I say keep it up there because, you know, if we look at pop artists, it can be Lady Gaga, Madonna, they wear many hats in regards to their style and how they approach every album, right? A lot of people were doing albums. But yeah, you could say it's just a turning of a page or whatever. I think if you commit to a particular sound and that's what you're connected to of that time, and it goes through the music that you're doing during that time, then that can resonate with a particular type of person or people will follow you on that journey. I think the mistake that some people can make sometimes is that on an album, there are multiple genres and styles, and that sometimes can confuse an audience.
Yeah, totally. And I can understand too, with the process of like how people will not put out songs until like 2 years later or something, with the way that you're supposed to do press and get it out and do it justice with its press and how it goes. I think I can understand that your sound might have changed entirely by the time you're putting that out, and how to kind of still cater to that when you're like touring, or I understand as like an artist, when your heart is so involved with a project, it's really hard to then go and perform songs that you no longer connect with. And so that's all stuff that I'm still kind of asking other artists that I look up to how they do that. Cause I find that amazing, but yeah.
I think that's why it's important to continually move and push stuff out there. Like, I was always an album guy and I thought that was really important, but the way the speed of how things move so quickly now is that don't disagree with the EP or the single, because it's just release it, get it out there, get that feeling of it, and then you can kind of press on, or you can play it forever in your sets if it's a hit or you really like that song.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to, because again, I think a mistake that maybe some musicians make is that they might not record for, you know, 3 or 4 years, and then they're picking out songs that they did 4 years ago that's a nice song, and then they're playing it with the song that they wrote, you know, 6 weeks ago, and it just it's a bit mismatchy, you know. And I think you got to perform the stuff that you're doing currently, and you tour with that album, you tour with that EP or those the sound that you're going for, and then, you know, come back home, revisit what you're writing and do that again. I think that works. I don't think that's, you know, that's been proven and tested, and that way you can still be recreating yourself and not attaching it to yourself to things that aren't necessarily maybe you anymore.
Yeah, no, that's so true. That's solid advice.
First time seeing you clearly, stranger laying here with me. Keep on giving me reasons to leave you. Saying all of the right things. Seems you're the only one fighting. Why is it so easy to like it? Guess I like it. Little too much from when you were young. Take your truth, I almost do. I'm pulling away before a mistake. I almost wish. No, never did I ever picture myself feeling like this. Missing the taste of your silence. Boy, I never expected. Wishing you'd never been honest. To be honest, no, I never said it over and over. Seek the grace when you're older. Listen, how to get closure. You could have told her. Best that you never had. I'm only protecting my chances. I could get high on the sadness while I'm at it. Pulling away before a mistake. Follow you, I almost do. Could say that we tried and we're blaming the time. Was it too soon? No, never did I ever picture myself feeling like this. Missing the taste of your silence. No, boy, I never expected. Wishing you'd never been honest. To be honest, no.
Oh, that's my jam right there. I love when it opens up to the chorus and that second voice.
Your moves on that track.
Sorry, man. I got to dance, dude. I got to feel the rhythm, all right? It's got all that percussive stuff in there.
I love it.
Oh, man, it's fantastic. Yeah,
that was so good.
I like the voicings in that. When the chorus opens up, it's real. It's got that real dreamy thing, which I often really like. I like that kind of daydreaming experience, or where you kind of float off a little bit, you know? I really like the voicings in that, dude. I think you did a bang-up job. I reckon that's my jam. That's my jam right there.
Wow, thank you. Ah, I think
I like
that one is a bit of a hidden gem. I found audience-wise that a lot of the musos of my listeners loved Never a lot. I think it kind of was nice because it falls in that alt pop but still has like a touch of R&B, which I think is also kudos to Ben, my producer. He kind of came from the pop R&B field, so I think it melds really well with our two sounds. And I'm so glad you rate it. Thanks.
Very good, very good. And it is quite a clean recording there. So this Ben character, you recorded that in the studio, that's how you did it there. So walk me through that. How do you know this cat? How did it happen? What did you do?
Yeah, so Benjamin Oldland, shout out to him. He's an amazing producer. And he works out of his kind of we wrote Guarantee in like the back room of his family house when he was working from there, and then he moved out and his garage was then a studio. So I think I always imagine pop stars when you get that clean sound that you had to go to a professional studio. And again, we're just busting all the myths. Yeah, we don't need that. Mm. So I knew him through through old church days. We kind of had mutual friends and all that kind of stuff. But I knew he was working in pop for a while, and he was doing a lot of work with Rob Amoruso. And so I kind of just reached out because we were both following each other on Insta, and I just asked him to point me in the direction of anyone who knew anything about anything to do with music. And for a while he gave me a list of names, but he was also like, look, I'm pretty busy, but I might be able to fit you in. And I was like, please no, like massive disclaimer. I have no idea what I'm doing. I just want to learn. I'll probably just ask you a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
And so he was like, look, what I usually do is I specialize in working with new developing artists and working like on a song in 1 week. And by the end of the week, you have a fully mixed and mastered like track that you can put out by the end. And you come in and you write it with him at the start. And so I had no idea what kind of level my songwriting was at from my bedroom kind of quality. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, look, I'll give it a go. We'll see how we go. And Guarantee poured out of that session. And it was just like this magical, we both were like, there is something really special about this song. Mm. And the way that I think he just managed to pull out of me like such gold. I had very raw ideas. Like I walked into the session and I knew I wanted to write a song called Guarantee. And I had a couple of, I thought I had the pre and the chorus. And it turned out that he was like, I actually think that's a verse and a pre. And so we kind of shifted that. And that's when we came up with the hook. And I'd never learnt what a hook was or how to write a hook. And and I went home after that session and I kind of took my loop pedal and I tried to come up with the like harmonies for Guarantee. And so, yeah, that was kind of like the really initial, just like so random and raw. And it came out in a week and it was great. And so I think we just loved working together. And since then I've done so much. I trust him a lot as a person and as a producer, and he understands my story and my sound. And so I just think we work really well together. And it's at the point now where we actually work with other artists, like writing for them. This past week, we did two different sessions with Ula and Fergus James, and we wrote two awesome tracks. So it's just a really cool creative collaboration. Yeah.
He sounds like a cool dude, and he sounds like he's got ears, right? The things that he's saying and mixing stuff up, you know, because a lot of cats, especially when you go to, you know, your home studio route and whatever, you know, a lot of people in production can be quite shy. And they don't want to say anything to offend the singer or not give their opinion. But he's like, okay, I think we need to do this here. And, you know, not to overstep on the artist, but that's what you want, man. When you want a producer, you don't want everyone to be like, you don't want everything you do is like, oh, that was great. That was great. It's like, okay, how do we serve this as a song, right? You got to put your ego aside, especially on a pop sensibility where you're trying to make something that will resonate with multiple people, is that you've got to be open to those kind of things. And I kind of like the vibe of what he's saying, where he's still getting your authentic self, but just improving on that and elevating it is probably the best way to put it. So
yeah, and I think people shouldn't shy away from collaboration. I think that's something that I remember growing up being like, oh my goodness, look at like this Beyonce track, or look at this Ed track. Look how many people have written on this. That's terrible. They don't even write their own songs. And now that I'm working in sessions and I understand the culture, it's actually the complete opposite sometimes. I know sometimes it is not the case and they just want someone's name on a track to look good. But a lot of the time, like collaborating, you learn so much and you can pull from different inspo so that not all your stuff just ends up sounding the exact same, you know? And it's just really cool to collaborate with different people, even when you're not writing on your own work. Like that's something I never thought I'd be doing, and now I have a catalog building of people's that I've written on, and it's just so special to hear your melodies but sung by someone else. And yeah, it's just a really cool thing to do.
100%, dude. That's the way. That's you got to be able to collaborate with people. That idea or that notion that it's just you and on the guitar is something that, and it can be just that. I'm not trying to take away from that. You know, I've got a lot of folk artists to come on, and it's a beautiful thing. But with a pop mentality, or getting your music out there, or getting a sonic quality that actually might be quite organic, that needs to be done by someone, and it doesn't necessarily mean it can be done by yourself. So you definitely got to reach out to other people, and strength in numbers sometimes, or with really, really good people. You know, like I'm a really big fan of, say, Lady Gaga or something like that, right? but look at the people that she works with. You know, whether it's Ronson or look how much, how many diverse people that he's worked with, but he's got his own signature thing. And he pulls like people from the Deftones and all that kind of stuff and pays homage to a lot of old music in a real contemporary way. So it's not about getting rid of the old and doing all this new crispy, clean stuff. It's actually going, okay, how do we inject that into the songs and make it modern and move forward, because things can't stay stagnant.
Yeah, absolutely. No, so true.
You know what I'd love though, because I when I watched your ISO thing, actually going back to the old, is that, you know, do you like Eva Cassidy?
I love Eva Cassidy. When you brought her up in the intro, I was like, did I write that in my bio somewhere and I forgot? Like, because I grew up listening to her. Yeah, good pick.
Well, I've just been listening to what's the you know, the live album, because the reason why I said it was when I watched your Isolation performance, it reminded me of what album was it? It was in the blue something. It was at a jazz club, right? And she played all the way through. She was never really happy with it. That's one of the recordings that most people listen to, right?
Yeah.
And it reminded me of like maybe release. I don't know if it would work now talking about all, everything we've just talked about, but doing like a live album, and, you know, she performed it, I think, a couple of times night after night like you would in the old days, right? At a jazz club, and they just got a really good recording of it. And that's what a lot of people listen to. And I thought, oh, that Isolation thing could be really cool, stripped back or doing something like that. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I have. And this is the thing is, like, an artist, everyone's hearing on my Spotify very like popified stuff, but I still do write a lot of the time from an instrument. And I still, with my band at the moment, we're not using tracks. We still play completely live. And so trying to find that middle ground for live performances is really cool. But there's a lot of tracks I still have written on guitar and don't think I'd ever take into a pop context. I think they only live and breathe with real instruments with those particular ones. And so a lot of people have wanted me to release like a live EP or like a voice memo EP or just something that is really, really stripped back. Because I think I feel very fortunate that my voice is something that kind of ties everything together, but it has fitted into, is that the right word, fitted?
Yeah, sure.
It's fit into.
Both ways.
It kind of fits in like the folky context or the really like ballady singer-songwriter stuff, but it's also really nicely melded into this kind of niche spot of pop that's not just so straightly sung, but I love both and I can't yet just pick which route to go down. So I'd love to find a spot in my audience where they'd still appreciate the stripped back stuff, and hopefully it doesn't divide everybody. So, but I would love to.
I reckon that would be cool. Like Eva did, right? Which is like where you go and you pick a club and you play there for four nights, and maybe on the third night where you're just really in that pocket, because you can do it. I've seen obviously through the Isolation video, not everyone can get a clean performance, and you're really good at that. And I like the way your song sounded in, like, you did play, I think you play Guarantee and those kind of things at that Isolation thing, and it gave it a different kind of sensibility. And I think maybe an unplugged thing or a, you know, because you're still playing like electric guitar and your brother's in the back there and you got a couple of backing. So it was really cool too. I liked how you did it.
It was sick, hey. I love that team. Those two guys, Kieran and Dylan, they ran it. And I actually reached out to them because I do want to record some acoustic stripped back, just solo ones or just with my band again. They do incredible stuff with all that. And it was all just one take. I'd never formed a band before. We formed like 3 weeks before and did one rehearsal before that show. And it just, it just fell together really nicely. But they're very talented, so they made us look very cool. I think it's all credit to them.
I can tell at the end, because you know when you got a, you know, stomach full of worms at the end, or, you know, because you're just getting through this thing. But you seem super chilled and really comfortable on the electric guitar. But at the end of it, I realized, you know, you let your hair down. And it's like, we did it, guys. We did it. You know, at the end of the video, like, I know that feeling,
exactly.
You know, where you just like, you kind of let it go and you're like, great. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah.
Cause you were so composed and so professional.
Stoked you got through.
Yeah.
It amazes me when people talk about seeing it and seeing me be so chill, and same with on stage. Like, I've only done three now real gigs because of COVID, and every time people are like, you're just so comfy up there, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I freak out. I'm like shaking beforehand, but I'm so glad it doesn't translate. That's great.
Yeah, really good, man. And I saw that you mentioned, I think you mentioned during while you were playing, is that the electric guitar is kind of a new thing for you, because I know that you were kind of doing the piano situation, or electric keyboard, whatever it is. But man, you played that thing like Excalibur, in the sense of just the way you held it. It just seemed like, you know, when, you know, it's kind of that Harry Potter thing where the wand chooses you a little bit. I kind of really liked you on guitar, and just even the image of you holding it. But
sweet, you know,
I know that when people change over, I can often tell where it's like, oh, this isn't their first instrument, or they wanted to write this instrument on guitar. But I just felt like that really melded with you really well, and I think that's something you should really explore. Wow. And I love seeing a woman on electric guitar, because it's always such a male-dominated instrument, and it's like, you know, people that slay are just usually males. But when I see a woman with an electric guitar, it's so refreshing. But also, it didn't feel like a gimmick. Mm. It just felt like you. You want a guitar, man. You want an electric guitar. It worked really well. Yeah, I dig it. Explore
Thank
it more.
You.
I think there's
that is such a compliment. I my baby's actually sitting. Oh wait, where is it? Sitting behind me somewhere.
Yeah.
I remember buying it, and just I remember when I first bought it, I was like, this just looks so cool.
I know.
Like, it's like just this white Telecaster.
White telly, right? Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right.
And it was like the first thing that I spent some of the JobKeeper payments on, and I remember just being so excited. And so the more I played it, the more I was like, I think most of my songs actually sit in a sonically where I prefer them. And I think I've been bridging away from the folk stuff and all that from acoustic for a while, and it just felt right. And now I write on electric a lot more, and I'm really exploring that, which is really cool. So it's good to hear that it translates really well, because I do feel comfortable playing it now, and I think I feel my most, you know, when they're like, visualize the person you want to be and like step into that. And I think when I play my telly at shows, I definitely am most comfortable playing no instruments, because voice has always been my number one. But the songs that I'm very comfortable playing, I just feel like it is visualizing my coolest self when I'm playing that. And that's so good to hear. I'm just going to keep on practicing and playing it, because I'm trying to translate all of my set now onto electric, so that I no longer have to swap guitars the way that I do at the moment.
That's a great idea. And it's like, you know, just even from, you know, not that that's what it's about, but even on a marketing level, it just sets you aside from, there are, you know, and I get a lot of, and I love folk, I really, really like it, but, you know, even Dylan went to electric, you know, and you got to think like, but, you know, people lost their shit, but, you know, it's just such a good point of difference where folk singers, I guess, obviously traditionally on electric guitar, on acoustic guitar, and to see someone on a telly and telling those kind of melancholy songs, I just think it adds another kind of slice of cool to it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I give such credit to Holly Humberstone. She is so rad, and she was one of the first singers that I kind of saw holding an electric, and I was like, I think my stuff would sound a lot nicer in this vibe. Like, for some reason, I think I sometimes play the stuff on acoustic and it just sounds lame in my ears, for like, not for anyone else's stuff, but for my stuff, it's just not how I dream it. And so, it's really cool. Yeah. It's a really cool thing to try out. And also I just think that, like in the genre, I've kept guessing where I wanted to fall, but I know that a lot of the time there have been pop singers who don't play anything, and I always wanted to keep original to kind of the skill sets that I have, and being able to play an instrument and sing, I think, is not necessarily everyone in the pop realm's thing. And so to have that kind of little bit of difference for marketability and all that kind of stuff is still a really good thing, and I'm most comfortable behind it, so that's also great to know.
Yeah, man, I think it's really cool, and yeah, like I said, I just think it really works for you. And I wish I could play. I got a telly, and I just couldn't pull it off, man. But you're pulling it off, so I'm kind of envious. And
really?
I don't like you.
No,
a little
I'm
bit
sure
for
you
it.
Could. You're just being hard on yourself.
Oh, man. No, but it's, yeah, I think it's a really cool thing. And I think that, yeah, just sets you apart from what a lot of other people are doing. So let's talk about, you know, you mentioned someone before, but let's talk about your influences. Who are your guys and girls that have either informed your music or even just your taste?
Yeah, yeah. I think I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't really have any like key influences. And I think that's why I've had such a struggle defining my style, because I haven't just come from a couple in that one genre. And so like growing up, my influences like 100% was the phase of like Matt Corby, Ben Howard, right. Of Monsters and Men, like that sort of vibe. And so I think that influenced my singing. And like, I remember meeting Matt Corby and just being so, I was just in adoration, and the way that he has control over his voice as an instrument. In regards to playing, it continuously changes, because now I'm listening out for with a production ear. Like I'm trying That's to get good. Into a little bit of production, even just for my own demos and things like that. And so I don't have any like key people that I listen to, but it's more so anyone in the alt pop realm, particularly in Aussie music. In the last 6 months, I just keep on listening to a whole bunch of different people. I think Elliot was the first kind of singer-songwriter, but in the alt pop region, if you know her. I adore her voice, but I also think her writing is beautiful. And then from like overseas, I was always, the first couple of references I used was like JP Sachs's lyrical writing, and then like Julia Michaels, Lennon Stella. She's probably the biggest continual influence of my stuff. But lots of new ones, which kind of makes me, I always try to avoid that, because I know that it's great to have old school influences, but I think like Eva Cassidy and Tina Arena were kind of the only like old school ones that I actually liked, because my dad listened to like The Police and Sting, and like,
dude, he's great, just man.
Different ones like Simply Red and stuff. Yes. Oh, he's great, absolutely. But I just never really resonated with that kind of stuff. And my brother was always listening to funk and soul, I didn't adore. So, yeah, I just feel like a weird mix of many different things, and it's constantly changing. So, yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. You find your own style and situation through the music that you write. And I'm sure there are people that are informing you that are probably in the back of your head that you're not even realizing, because you've grown up with so much music, right? But both parents being musicians.
Yeah.
So there are things that probably, even though Sting and The Police aren't your thing, there might be something that you're gleaning from subconsciously. But yeah, man, I tell you what, I think you're doing the right thing. You've got a better handle on it than what most people do now. You know, with the way that you approached even getting your single out and how well that did. And yeah, I think you're kind of ticking all the boxes. You got your telly, your white telly, so you look cool. You got your bloody songs that you're writing.
That's the only box.
Yeah. Yeah, the white telly. I'm so jealous of the white telly. I just think you're killing it, man. And I take my hat off to you. And I love interviewing young professional artists like yourself that are doing it from the ground up and making it work and not stopping and working their head around. No worries. And working their head around the industry and how that works, because it isn't. You can't just play a song and wait for some record label to pick you up. They don't go and scout like that anymore. Those days are over. You've got to do it and release it. And you're doing it, man. You're making the dream come true. So good for you, Sydney Rose, huh? Come on, girl.
Thank you. Huh?
All right, man. You know what?
Thanks, man.
My pleasure, dude. Thanks for coming on the show. All the best to you. We're going to be looking out for your music. I'm excited. And yeah, let's go out with, oh, we've got an unreleased track that you were happy for us to, I play the whole thing through? This is Tried, I think it is.
Yeah, absolutely can.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. So this is I'm going to call it a Type 45 exclusive. So once again, Sydney, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you slay on the electric guitar and showing the men how it's really done.
Thank you.
My pleasure. And we're going out with Try.
Sometimes I wish you'd call, just so I can hit decline. hours that we talked. Swore that you'd be here for life. Why would you say that if you were gonna change your mind? Wish you would take back all of the hurt you left behind. I don't wanna think about it. I still drown when others say your name, and I don't wanna be around you. I'll just fall again. Said you were mine. Lies. Wasting my time trying. You crossed all my lines blind. How can you say that you've care at all. I had to learn to stop replying. Guarding with my clothes, you don't even choke. Does anybody know you lied? Why would you say?
Why would you say?